So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 5, Narada's instructions on the Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 11. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tadvagvasargo janatagda viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abadda bhajyapi namanyanantasya yushon kitani yat shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadavah. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words, directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best even from the worst. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place, without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. While preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend, China, has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness. In every country over the surface of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly there is no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is not due to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically, there is propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world, to do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart, and naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature, conveying transcendental messages for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general, and re-spiritualizing the world atmosphere, is fraught with many difficulties. Our presenting this matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail. And there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, and the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God. When there is a fire in a house, the inmates of the house go out to get help from the neighbors, who may be foreigners, and yet without knowing the language, the victims of the fire express themselves, and the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast this transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success. When there are too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world, there is no wonder that a person or a nation attacks another person or nation on slight provocation. That is the rule of this age of quarrel or Kali. The atmosphere is already polluted with corruption of all description, and everyone knows it well. There are so many unwanted literatures full of the materialistic ideas of sense gratification. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censor obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want such literature, yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read. That is a natural instinct. But because their minds are polluted, they want such literatures. Under the circumstances, transcendental literature like Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt mind of the people in general, but also it will supply food for their hankering after reading some interesting literature. In the beginning, they may not like it, because one suffering from jaundice is reluctant to take sugar candy. But we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jaundice. Similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing the reading of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jaundice-like condition of sense gratification. When men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures which are catering poison to society will then automatically cease. We assure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter. Om Agyanatim Adandasya Janamjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umiritam Neena Tasmai Shibarayana. So, it is practically speaking. It's practically speaking a declaration of war that we are making. A war against ignorance. Yes, we are in a state of war. This is not a time of peace. This is a time of war. Because the world has become so chaotic, just as on slight provocation now Israel has attacked Lebanon. They've bombed their international airport. There's a war going on there. On slight provocation. Because people are agitated. They want to fight. They want to lord it over. It's a tendency of sense gratification. Formerly, people lived peacefully and happily on this planet. But now, people can't do that because the age is such that people are always agitated. They want to fight. Even neighbors fight with one another. Just like we saw someone put that garbage bag outside your door. He's a fighting spirit. People are not peaceful. They're agitated because they think their happiness is the gratification of the senses. But the problem is with the senses, is the senses want unlimited gratification. It's like the man, he marries some woman, but then he wants to have so many lusty affairs at the same time. He's not satisfied with one wife. He wants more and more and more. So this is the nature of the senses. Dushparena nalena cha. They're never satisfied and they burn like fire. But a devotee is a bird of a different feather. Devotee has the mood of the swan. He is not after material sense gratification. He understands it is a foolish, useless waste of time. Therefore, he simply peacefully absorbs himself in chanting Krishna's name, absorbing himself in hearing and discussing the wonderful topics of the Lord, and serving the Lord. He's totally satisfied. He wants to give up sense gratification as far as possible. Minimize it to the bare minimum. Because he understands it's a deadly trap, sense gratification. It's a deadly trap. As soon as you get in the mood of gratifying your senses, then it will pull you further and further and further away from your actual identity as a spiritual being. So therefore, we must stop, as far as possible, stop material sense gratification. Just take what we need to keep body and soul together, and the balance energy saved by not endeavoring for unnecessary material gratification. That energy should go into the process of self-realization, the Krishna consciousness process. If one can re-channel one's energies in this way, then one will find that actually there is something far more wonderful than any amount of material sense gratification. And that is the sweet taste of Krishna's name. That is the sweet taste of surrendering yourself to Krishna, doing everything for his pleasure and satisfaction. Just as the hand is meant to serve the whole body, and cannot actually be satisfied trying to become gratified separately from the body. Similarly, the living entity can really not become gratified. He tries to become gratified by gratifying his senses. But the problem is the senses are not him. If you're hungry and then you take your shirt and you put it in the pot of dal, will that satisfy you? Will that feed you? No. So sense gratification means you are serving the covering You're polishing the bird cage, you're not feeding the bird who's within the cage. So it's futile. It's simply shama eva hi kevalam. It is a useless waste of time. So the whole world now is completely entangled in material sense gratification. Therefore, there is a great need for a spiritual revolution. We must fully dedicate ourselves henceforth to a spiritual revolution for the upliftment of the human society. And how do we push forward this revolution known as the Krishna Consciousness Movement in the shape and form of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? How do we push forward this ISKCON revolution? Prabhupada describes it right here. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and flame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. So all we have to do to push forward the ISKCON revolution for the upliftment of the human society, for the salvation of the human society, all we have to do to push forward the ISKCON revolution is to be 24 hours a day absorbed in hearing and broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord. It's all we have to do. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. We have to read these books. We have to distribute these books. We have to make this knowledge available to everyone. Prabhupada actually says they will accept it. This is very encouraging what Prabhupada is stating here in this purport. He's actually saying, we are sure that everyone in human society will welcome the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada is predicting that this whole world will become Krishna conscious. So the point is that this spiritual revolution, the ISKCON spiritual revolution, is guaranteed by the words of Srila Prabhupada to be successful. The words of the pure devotee must come true. So it is actually guaranteed that ISKCON will be successful in liberating the human society from the quagmire of material sense gratification. But it won't happen by our just sitting around. We have to actually become active for broadcasting this message. Each and every member of ISKCON should be very, very eager and enthusiastic, especially those who were born in India, because they were directly ordered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyone who has taken birth in India, it is their duty to become Krishna conscious and spread it all over the world. So what about those of us who weren't? Well, Prabhupada actually gave us, the Europeans and the Americans, the same order. So it's not that only the Indians can, propagate this message. Actually, in one sense, we're all, the whole planet was formerly called Bharat, anyway. So in that sense, we're all Indians. This is just the outlying regions of India. So actually everyone in the universe should become Krishna conscious and participate in this spiritual revolution for the deliverance of everyone from the quagmire of blindness, lust, avarice, greed, etc. So we can ask now if there's any questions.
Give the examples of one can take gold from the filthy place, wife from a very dirty place. So my question is this: then is it all right that it's also mentioned that one should not hear the holy name from the mouth of Mayavadi? So where do we stand regarding this? Can't we take the holy name from Mayavadi also?
No.
because it's a filthy place. But
you have to understand the example here, what Prabhupada's point is. You're extracting a different meaning. You have to understand what is Prabhupada's point by making these examples. Mm-hmm. You see?
Yes, sure.
His point is this. His point is made in the context of the verse, not in some from some other out there in the, you know, in some fringe. The point is that one may make mistakes even in presenting it. Just like sometimes when I quote a Sanskrit verse, I may miss a word or mispronounce a word, for example. But that doesn't actually, that doesn't mean that one shouldn't hear. One should not hear because I mispronounced a Sanskrit word. Gold can be taken even from a filthy place. So even if someone is mispronouncing the Sanskrit, that doesn't mean we can't hear from them and be benefited. This is the point.
My question is, then Mayavadi is also chanting Hare Krishna, so if we take the Hare Krishna from them, it is...
That's another... Now we'll deal with this point.
Okay.
Can one hear from the Mayavadis? Actually, one should not. Because their kirtan, even though it may be musically very attractive, there's one popular bhajan singer who travels, an American man who travels all over the world singing bhajans, Hare Krishna, Durga, Shiva, etc. And he's a Mayavadi philosopher, he's a Mayavadi follower. So actually we should not go here for him. Even though musically it may be very attractive, that kirtan actually pollutes us with Mayavadi philosophy. You should not hear from the kirtan of Mayavadis. And even these professional, you know, sense gratificatory Bollywood people, they sometimes put out bhajan music for the, you know, making money. But it's popular in India. That also is not good for us to hear. We should hear from people who are strictly following Vaishnava principles. That's the kirtan we should hear. Questions more?
Sometimes, like, we see, like, devotees get forewarning of their death, their departure. And, like, Maharaj...
Devotees get forewarning, okay.
Yeah, like, Maharaj Parikshit.
Okay.
He got forewarning. So he, like, intensely absorbed himself in Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, we all know, like, death is coming anytime, any second. But it's still, like, there's still not that intensity there. So, like, how to, like, I guess not put it off and just, like, develop that intensity.
So do you have any objection to becoming intensely absorbed right now?
She's saying how to do it.
I don't have any objection, no.
Alright, then why not then do it? Become intensely...
How to do it, I guess.
How to do it?
Like, some things, I don't know.
You have to preach to yourself. That's one thing. You have to pray, Krishna, my dear Lord. I mean, you have to, the whole point is you have to cultivate the mood of pure bhakti at every minute. You can't become lackadaisical. At every minute, you should be cultivating pure bhakti. If you're not reading or you're not chanting, you should be praying. Somehow, always keep yourself at every minute absorbed in devotional service. That's the point. If there's a spare minute, you should read, or if you're not reading, you should be praying. You know, every minute you have to utilize it for Krishna. That's the point. And you have to always be chopping away at the anarthas, trying to, you know, always scrubbing your heart. Never give up. Always be trying to cleaning. It's not that you, the work is finished. You got your rounds done, now you can do any damn thing you want. It's not like that. Every minute you have to be very vigilant. You have to be seeing, what is the mind doing? Is it properly absorbed in Krishna consciousness? And is not, I have to do something. I have to chastise the mind, or I have to pray to Krishna to help me to get over some greed or anger or lust or laziness. We have to be very much always very, very eager and enthusiastic. Yato nishchalati manas chanchalam astadam, to bring the mind back to Krishna. You really, really have to be very, very serious to be in the mood of pure devotional service for our own happiness, first of all, and for the spiritual revolution also. By hearing the singa, or they ain't a singa. You should purify your own heart and you should try to revolutionize the planet. You see, both things. So both things, for both purposes, you require to be very, very focused. Intense means you're always focused. You always stay focused on the business at hand, which is to become a pure devotee of Krishna. When you read, do you not focus your eyes so that you can see what's going on within the words? You see? Isn't it? So you should focus your mind so you know what you're doing. Your mind shouldn't be spacing out here, looping the loop around the Milky Way somewhere. You see? You have to bring your mind to the business at hand. If you're cleaning the Lord's dishes, then you should be very attentive. How am I doing them? Am I leaving some dirt? If I'm driving the car and I have to change lanes, and I have to see, is there any, I have to check the blind spot. Not just my mind somewhere else. Yeah. You see? We have to be very focused on everything that we're doing, that we don't make any mistakes. Mistakes means you're a conditioned soul. There's four defects of a conditioned soul. The first thing is the senses are imperfect. Imperfect senses. The second point is, because your senses are imperfect, therefore you have a tendency to be illusion. And because you have a tendency to be illusion, you make mistakes. And in spite of bungling this thing and bungling that thing, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, in spite of having a solid track record of bungles, one thinks, so I'm a great advanced devotee. You see, that's called cheating. Instead of realizing what a fool I am, I'm thinking, oh, I'm so great. I'm so advanced in Krishna consciousness. Why they don't appreciate me? The great advanced person that I am. That's called cheating. So these are the four symptoms of one who's conditioned. Imperfect senses, tendency to be illusion, make mistakes, and present oneself as being a great realize personality in spite of all these mistakes. So you have to realize you are a conditioned soul, you're subject to these four defects, and therefore you have to be very, very conscious to curb those tendencies down. For the imperfect senses, what do? Then you have to hear, you have to take your knowledge, you have to take your guiding principles from that source which is not under these defects. That is the spiritual master, because he is purely representing Krishna. Therefore, you have to take your directions from your spiritual master and from the scriptures and from the advanced devotees of the Lord, who assist the spiritual master in his service of delivering you from the cycle of birth and death. So instead of relying on your imperfect senses, you have to rely on your spiritual master, on the sadhus and on the scriptures, Srila Prabhupada's books, for understanding what is what. So don't take the information from your imperfect senses. Take guru, sadhus, and shastra. That is your basis of knowledge. And if you do that faithfully, in all times, all places, and all circumstances, then you will be able to transcend the tendency that you have to be illusioned. You will become an enlightened being to the extent that you do not give your senses any longer the power of attorney. To the extent that you give instead your faith to the words of Guru, Sadhus, and Shastra. Yashya Deve Parah Bhaktir Tata Deve Tata Garau Tashyaite Katita Yarta Prakashante Mahatmanah. Only unto those great souls who have unflinching faith in the words of their spiritual master are the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So you have to no longer put your faith in your imperfect senses. You have to instead put your faith in the words of your guru, your spiritual master, the scriptures, and the sadhus. In this way, you will become free from the tendency to be illusion. You'll stop making mistakes, and you'll stop cheating. So it really all boils down to no longer taking your senses very seriously. You have to become expert at neglecting the demands of your senses. That's your advancement in Krishna consciousness. How much you are expert at neglect. Yes, yes, yes. It's like Haridas Thakur. The beautiful prostitute came to him in the dead of night and disrobed herself in his presence. But he did not give in to the... He's a young man. He had powerful senses. He could have had sex enjoyment. But he did not cater to the demands of the senses. He simply thought, how can I deliver this poor girl, the victim of this material nature? How can I deliver her? And so. So he was successful in delivering her. She became a great pure devotee of the Lord by the loving kindness of Srila Haridas Thakur. She became a pure devotee. So if he had given in to the demands of the senses, then it would have been disaster for him and disaster for her. And because he did not take any interest in the demands of the senses, he became more glorified as a great devotee of the Lord, and she became delivered. So in this way, we have to remember Haridas did not give in to the senses, but he remembered his duty. You see, you can act, there's two ways you can act. You can serve your senses, or you can do your duty. The Indian culture, formerly, was strictly based on this principle of duty, dharma, doing what is your duty, you see. Acting on the basis of duty, not on the demands of the senses. That is human civilization. When one acts on the basis of duty, not on sense desire. Even today we see, just like one of my disciples, he was married by the arrangement of his parents, not by any sense gratificatory desire. The parents said, okay, son, come back to India, we have your wife picked up. So there was no sensual agitation. There was no sense gratificatory stimulus that impelled him to get married. Simply, he got married on the basis of duty. My father and mother have now instructed me to come and pick up my wife. come and sit for the wedding ceremony, take your, get your wife. Simply duty, acting out of duty. And Srila Prabhupada actually said he wanted to introduce this system into ISKCON. We're far from it now, but Prabhupada wanted to introduce arranged marriages into ISKCON. Because then you're acting on duty. You're not acting on sensual attraction. Sensual attraction may appear to be very nice, but it turns to poison very quickly. It is actually happiness in the mode of passion. If one acts on the basis of sensual attraction, then you get some instant gratification. You get some instant nectar, but very quickly it turns into the bitterest poison. Very bitter poison. Acting on duty may sometimes appear poisonous in the beginning because we're so addicted to acting on the basis of sense desire. To give that up and to act as on the basis of duty sometimes appears to be very poisonous. But you know what? It is transformed into the sweetest nectar at the end. So why take some quick, cheap thrill which then turns into a hellish nightmare which goes on forever? Why not take some austerity? Tapasa brahmacharena. You see. Why not accept some austerity up front and then achieve eternity, knowledge, and bliss? This is intelligent. But the foolish rascals, they would rather just have the quick gratification. Smoke a cigarette, drink some liquor, have some sex pleasure, you know, eat some meat, have some quick instant pleasure, never mind the result. You see. This is foolish, completely foolish. And there are two considerations. One is called Shreya, and the other is called Preya. Two types of beneficial things. Preya means that which is immediately beneficial. Material sense gratification gives you instant gratification. And the other is Shreya, that which is ultimately beneficial. As we many times describe, when I was in high school in Houston, Texas, it was very hot and humid there. In those days, they didn't have air conditioning in the school, so it was very hellish. You get near the end of the spring semester and you're rolling into the summer months. Oh, I mean, the whole school was just hanging with this humid, hot air. It's very unpleasant to sit in those classrooms in the afternoon. Very, very unpleasant. And some of our fellow students, they had dropped out of school, so they were working at some gas station to make some money, pumping gas. And they took their money and they bought one hot rod, and they would show off in the afternoons. Outside our physics class, they'd be out there on the street going up and down, vroom, 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 showing off to all of us kids who were sitting in the classroom. But just see, I'm out here enjoying and you're sitting there in the classroom and suffering like anything. So they're enjoying like anything and we're suffering. But 10 years later, they're still working at that damn gas station, getting paid the minimum. And the kids who stuck it out in the physics class and during fifth period, they got college degrees, they're sitting in an air-conditioned office with a nice salary. So that's called Shreya. When you do the austerities to achieve that which is unlimitedly beneficial. And Preyas, you go for the quick, cheap, easy thrill, but then you remain stuck in the rut. So the devotee of the Lord intelligently gives up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. Intelligently give these things up, understanding they may give some quick instant pleasure, but the end result is a hellish nightmare, actually. So he gives these things up and he chants Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then by this, surrender to Krishna in the form of his name, that devotee then becomes unlimitedly happy. He achieves that position of great delight, ever-increasing thrill at every minute. So one has to seriously lay aside the tendency for material sense gratification, very seriously cultivate pure devotional service at every minute. That's what you have to do. Otherwise, you're simply flirting with disaster if you don't do it. You're flirting with disaster. You're asking to take birth again. You have to go in another womb of another mother. Suffer again, being bitten by worms in the mother's womb. It could even be a dog's mother also. Someone has to be very careful. Very, very careful. Be very serious about Krishna consciousness at every minute. Never become frivolous and whimsical in your devotional service. Always be very, 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 very serious about Krishna consciousness. That you must do. Otherwise, you're simply an unnecessary burden to your Guru Maharaj, causing him difficulty. If you don't seriously execute this process, then you're a burden on him. You're a great burden to him if you don't take it very seriously. So don't be a burden for your spiritual master. Become an asset by fully surrendering to him and fully dedicating yourself to spreading Prabhupada's movement. Questions? More?
Would you, I got an email yesterday which stated, like, you know, it just showed us statistics that in US there are about 4,000 abortions every day.
4,000 abortions every day?
So, and also previously you stated, like, you know, who all gets the karmas. So, is it like the people who decide that, who legalize abortion?
Everyone gets the karma. The Supreme Court justices who voted for it, they get heavy, 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 heavy karma. The doctors who do the abortions, the people who agree to the abortions, the people who agreed to fund the abortions, everyone that's involved in any degree, everyone gets implicated. Everyone has blood on their hands. Everyone. It's a horrible thing. Murdering these children. 4,000 children a day murdered in the U.S. It doesn't make this like the Israel is so agitated that the Hezbollah, the terrorists, kidnapped two of their soldiers and they're practically declared war on Lebanon because of it. But what about all the babies they're murdering every day? There's a big fuss. Two soldiers were kidnapped. But what about the thousands of babies that you're legally murdering every day? Why something isn't being done about that? That's a greater atrocity than kidnapping two soldiers. To murder thousands of babies every day. You see? Actually, as such, government has to be straightened out. We have to educate the public not to vote for such leaders that are going to murder babies and murder cows. Authorize the murdering of babies and cows. We have to educate people not to support such government by their votes. We need to elect people who are Krishna conscious to run the countries of the world. You see, we have to increase the numbers of our Krishna conscious movement so that we will have some voting power to put a stop to this nonsense. That's why we have to preach, we have to distribute books door to door, city to city, town to town. Distribute book. This knowledge has to be disseminated to the people. So important thing. Questions more?
Somebody yesterday, we were talking about like how it is important to hear. That we have 2 ears and 1 mouth, and it's important to hear from realized people. But my question was that is it? We also heard that the speaker who's giving the lecture gets the maximum benefit. People who ask questions get second, and the people who hear get for benefit. So is it important to speak as well as or?
Well, first of all, it's not that the speaker gets more benefit than the hearer. That's not true at all. There are two great acharyas of hearing and chanting. You see, Shukadeva is the acharya of speaking, and Pariksha Maharaj is the acharya of hearing. They both receive equal benefit. It's not that the speaker gets more benefit than the hearer. If that was the case, it'd be pretty unfair, don't you think? You have to sit here and take less benefit so I can get more benefit. That would be a very unfair thing. And then everybody would want to be giving class and nobody would want to be listening. So it's not a fact that the speaker gets more benefit. Everyone gets benefit according to their degree of absorption in pleasing Krishna. That's it. The hearer can get more benefit than the speaker, actually. If the speaker is tinged by a desire for name and fame when he's giving the lecture, but is speaking the philosophy as it is, he's getting benefit. But if the hearer is simply in the mood of being a humble devotee of the Lord with no desire of name and fame, then the hearer is getting more benefit than the speaker. So, does that answer your question? Okay. Yeah. You can't. This idea of the speaker gets more benefit is some materialistic idea. Not at all true. Not at all true.
I heard it in one of the lectures, Mataji.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And why would anybody want to hear? You know, we'd all be. Anybody can go into their closet and give a Bhagavatam class to the four walls of their closet. You know, okay, time for class, and everybody goes off and gives a class. You know, you give a class in the bathroom, you give a class in the bedroom, I'll give a class in the porch, you give a class here, you give a class there, we'll all give class to the walls, so we all get to get the maximum benefit of giving class. You see, it's a silly idea that the speaker gets more benefit than the hearer. It's a silly idea. It's a completely silly idea. Not based on Shastra. I don't know who came up with that idea. It's completely bogus concept. Sorry if I stepped on someone's toes, but what can I say? I just tell the truth. It's simply the matter, I mean, did Shukadev become a greater devotee than Pariksha Maharaj? They both became perfect in Krishna consciousness. That's the They got the same result. Shukadev and Pariksha, same result. Next question.
Do you get doing service and for taking Mahamaha Prasad, is it more beneficial to give the service to others than to taking
them out?
Yeah, is it more beneficial to doing service or giving service to others or taking Mahamaha Prasad or giving Mahamaha Prasad to others? Is equal benefits or how's that work?
Actually, it's the same principle. It's not so, as we just explained. It's not so much the service itself as it is the mood in which you're doing the service and the benefit, isn't it?
Depends on also.
Huh?
Am I just running for a particular service which I like it or anything?
Then that's not a good attitude. See, that's not the proper attitude.
That's not
the mood of bhakti.
I like this service, so I run for that service. And
because
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not so much what service you're doing, but it's the mood in which you're doing the service that will make you or break you. Or not break you, really, but inhibit you. The service will advance you, but it won't advance you as much as if you're doing it completely, you know, in a humble spirit. So
something that I like it, I'll run for it, and there's something I don't like it, and I have to do it. Put aside that one, and I run for the other one, which I like it.
Yeah.
So that is not proper. Right? That attitude is not good.
Yeah, the attitude, you should simply do that, but...
It's like in Bhagavad Gita, which is said, you know, that I'm trying to do other service more perfectly than the service that is given to me. What is it said?
It's better to do your own duty imperfectly than do someone else's duty perfectly, as stated. Whatever duty is requested of you by a guru and senior devotee, take that duty. Even if you can't do it very well, it's difficult for you, you find it very problematic, you make so many mistakes doing it, you'd rather do something you can do easily and successfully. Now take the prescribed duty you've been given and just do it to the best of your ability. That's bhakti. You see? That's bhakti. As long as you think you're doing what you like, you're serving. You're still serving yourself. You're still, you know, the name devotional service, you're serving yourself instead of serving Krishna and Guru. Instead of thinking, well, I like to do this service, so I'm going to push my elbow my way in and I'm going to do this service. So you think, what does Guru Maharaj want me to do? What does Guru Mata want me to do? You see? That's how you should think. Let me be surrendered to Guru and Guru Mata. Whatever they want me to do, let me do that. I may like it, I may not like it. That doesn't matter. Simply, let me do what pleases them. This way you have to meditate.
Generally, this is what in the beginning it's preached, that you do the what you like to do, so that's what our motto becomes, that what we like to do, that's what it is.
That's in the beginning, but once you're initiated, you know, you're in... the holiday's over. I mean, well, not really. I mean to say, that in the beginning, we engage people in doing what they like to do for Krishna. But once you say, okay, now I'm going to be a fully surrendered devotee, then you have to, you can't expect it. Okay, why don't you give me what I like to do? You can't think that way anymore. That's very good to attract someone to get a taste for devotional service. But once someone has realized that I need to be fully surrendered, then you should say, okay, I don't need to do what I like to do for Krishna now. I just want to do what will please my spiritual master, that's all. I don't need to think what will please me anymore. I can give that up. I still need to think what will please my spiritual master. That's what you have to do.
What if it's a service that we don't think it's maintainable, like over a long period of time, like if we're put in some sort of service position, we just don't think that...
Well, if there's difficulty, you can also always bring that to your spiritual master's attention.
Or the temple authorities. Mm-hmm. Or the temple authorities too.
Yeah. You bring it to my attention, you can bring it to Mataji's attention. There's some difficulty in a service. And, you know, you've been asked to do, but you're finding it, your spiritual life is being eroded by somehow or other. You can't handle that. Then you have to let that be known, so that an adjustment can be made. We want you we want you to stay. We don't want you to go away. So there's some difficulty. You're really having a hard time with your Krishna consciousness in a certain circumstance, and you have to let me know or let Mataji know, so we can guide, you know, we can appropriately deal with the situation, save you from going away.
That's for everybody, when they're difficult in their service, they should approach the authorities.
Yeah, we shouldn't be proud,
not just
we want to have an image of being a great advanced devotee. We should understand I'm not a great advanced devotee. It's the first thing we should always understand. I'm not a great advanced devotee. I'm a struggling neophyte. Should always understand what is our actual position. So we shouldn't be embarrassed to approach our authorities, explain to them what the difficulty is that we're having. We shouldn't let our false pride prevent us from doing that.
Also not that we give up our service out of frustration.
Yeah, we see sometimes a neophyte devotee will do that. They become frustrated and they just like throw in the towel, you know, the hell with it. I'm just going to sit in my corner and pout. You see? You can't have that kind of an attitude. That's called an immature child. One cannot have the attitude of an immature child. One should always think, what I like or what I don't like, it doesn't matter. Let me act on the basis of duty. What will please Guru Maharaj? That's it. What will Guru Maharaj want me to do in this situation? Let me do them. Questions more?
But yeah, on the same lines, it sometimes happens that we want to do more service, but because of time situation and just physical situations, we are not able to do it. But then also when we hear inspirational stories of other devotees doing or just pushing to maximum extent, it sort of puts us in that uncertain zone whether how much we should push or whether we just accept that that's what we can do at this point.
Well, you have to, you can experiment. You can say, well, let's see if we can increase our service and see if we can handle it. It's like you make an experiment. Well, just like a book distributing thing. Well, I can stay alive and, being out for 8 hours a day. But he thinks, well, if I stayed out an extra hour, then I could get more mercy from Lord Chaitanya by giving out more of his mercy to the conditioned souls. Let me see if I can handle 8.5 hours a day of book distribution. You can just experiment. Let me see if I can get by on less sleep, or let me see if I can get, you can experiment with these things. Try to push forward even further and see if you can handle that and maintain it. And if you can, then fine. And if not, it was only an experiment anyway. The basics you have to cover. Chant your 16 rounds, follow the principles strictly. Read Prabhupada's books, take only prasadam. The basics you have to always cover. But we're actually meant to revolutionize this planet, so we should see, what can I do for preaching activities? What can I do to help bring about the revolution, which is my duty? I'm meant to be not just a sadhaka, but for my own benefit, but actually be a spiritual revolutionary for the upliftment of the planet, planetary consciousness. So let me see if there's something I can do. It could just be, giving financial support for those who are preaching. That's another way of doing it. One doesn't have time and one is totally absorbed in earning money, then one could see, is there a way I can give more financial support to those who are actually doing the preaching work on the front line? It's another way. Just find some, always try to find some way that you can increase your own purification and increase your own absorption in pushing forward Krishna consciousness movement. It's like I had one person that he says, okay, I'm going to give you $250 a month to help you with your preaching. But then he realized, well, that was too much. I'm cutting back to 200. Is that all right? He says, yeah, it's fine. He wanted to give more, but he saw the practical, dollars and cents at the end of the month. He realized, I went too far, but 250 was too much. 200 I can handle, but 250 is too much. So it's just an example, but you can try to do as much as you can, and maybe you overextended, so then cut back a little bit. But always be, the mood is always, how can I do more? How can I do more? How can I do more? Questions more?
In that, how do you, not be lazy in the sense, whether you can actually handle it or whether you're just being lazy, oh no, I can't handle it. Or
yes. That's the trap. That the mind can do that. That's why we need the association of spiritual master, association of senior devotees, because they can help us to objectively see whether it's really too much or it's just your laziness mode once again doing you in. That's why you need a guru. That's why you need Advanced Devotee Association, because they can help you to discern whether you're making the proper analysis of the situation or not. Questions more?
Actually, I wanted to ask, it said that when we pray to Guru or to Krishna, the format is that first we should glorify them, and we should express how fallen we are, and then pray what is in our heart.
There's so many types of ways that one can pray. I mean, look at all the prayers given in our books. There's no one set hard and fast rule for you have to pray this way. The point is you have to pray for your prayer should not be tinged with material desire. Actually, the best thing for a neophyte devotee is to study the prayers of the great acharyas. Look at the prayers of Queen Kunti. There's a whole chapter. Study the prayers of Prabhupada's arrival prayers. The first thing is study the prayers of the liberated souls, and then it'll be very clear how you should pray. If you don't know how to pray, then just take a prayer that's given already in the Bhagavatam, for example. That's so nice. We think that we have met your grace. There's so many nice, prayerful slokas that you can offer to your spiritual master, you can offer to Srila Prabhupada, you can offer to Krishna. Just find prayers that are perfect in the books and use those. And then by understanding the proper mood of how the great acharyas pray, then you can also compose your own prayers. But there's no set formula you have to do exactly this way. It's the mood is the thing.
Are you talking about prayers or writing to the spiritual master?
Just praying prayers.
Because in writing, it's always been.
Here's an example. I could tell you, my dear Srila Prabhupada, please help me. I'm very fallen. I have all bad qualities in my heart. Please bless me with your mercy that I can get over these bad qualities and I can become purely absorbed in devotional service for my benefit and for the benefit of all the fallen conditioned souls throughout the entire universe. Please save me, Srila Prabhupada, from my bad qualities and bless me that I can be your pure representative. That's an example of how one can pray. I just did that spontaneously. So it's a matter of knowing the philosophy and praying in a way which is completely pure, without any tinge of please make me rich and famous, or that kind of prayer that we don't want. Please help me get a raise at my job. We don't want to pray for material things.
But is it necessary to first study the prayers, or can they be prayers spontaneously?
Is it necessary to first study the prayers? Yes, you should. Of course, you're already familiar with them. You've already done them. Gravastikam we sing every morning. Those are perfect prayers. You've already been doing that for many years. So you can pray now. You're qualified now. You're always, every day, you're reciting the prayers of coming from the great acharyas, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna. We're already doing that. So yes, you can make your own prayers now, but you just make them along the same line, the same mood as the prayers that you're already reciting from the acharya. Vande Guru Shri Charanaravindam. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. Questions more? This is the last chance for a while.
Vijay, I wanted to ask some advice from both of you how we can help things in, say, Tampa Temple, and how we can further increase our sadhana here.
The first question was how you can help the Tampa Temple?
Yes.
Tampa Temple? And the second one was?
How can we...
How can improve their sadhana?
Improve your sadhana. Well, the best improvement of sadhana is to get all your rounds, we already described. The main thing, if you get all your rounds done, of course, while we're here, it probably may be harder because we have these long classes. But get your rounds done before you head out. Morning japa. Before sunrise is ideal, but you can do it before you leave the house. Before you leave for your job, every morning get your rounds completely finished. Your sadhana will greatly improve if you make that a steady habit. That my rounds are done every day before I leave here. And as far as the Tampa temple, you have to ask Divishwan Prabhu how you can best be of service to him. I don't know specifically what his needs are. You should ask him. My instruction is you should take instructions from him on how you can best be of service to him. It's the easiest way to ask him. And over and beyond that, you should be getting qualified. I think you're aspiring disciple of Radhanath Swami. Yes? So you should now move in that direction of getting initiated as soon as possible. Maybe you're already meditating like that. That you must do, because diksha is a very important thing. And then once you're initiated, now you think, how can I perfect my relationship with Guru Maharaj? Should always be thinking. And the easy way of understanding that is given by Prabhupada himself in his prayer to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He says, save me of falling, your divine grace. If you always take that position, I am fallen, Guru Maharaj, save me, please save me. If you can always have that spirit, then that's perfect. That is perfect. I always feel that I'm very fallen, now Guru Maharaj, please save me from my fallen condition. That's how you make your relationship with your spiritual master perfect. Stop thinking that you're advanced. Understand that you're very fallen, and only by His mercy can you say, therefore you must beg for His mercy at every minute. Your attitude has to always be one of begging mercy from Guru Maharaj. I have practical experience, and even in when I'm giving a lecture, just like I remember I was in Suva, Fiji a few years ago, and I had been very tired, so I had taken a little rest in the afternoon, and then it was time to go to give a lecture, and I had been sleeping, actually. So it was the mode of ignorance, actually. When we sleep, the mode of ignorance comes in and affects your consciousness. So I was feeling so unqualified. I was in the car on the way to give a lecture. I'd just gotten up from resting. I felt so unqualified. Coming out of the Tamagoon. How can I possibly? It was 200 people sitting there waiting for me to give a lecture. A whole 200 people waiting. I'm saying, oh, Krishna, now please help me. I feel so unqualified. How I can properly do? And I, in that mood of just depending on Krishna, I spoke, and the whole hall, I was so inspired by the lecture. So even when I'm speaking, we have to feel that I'm unqualified, and Guru Maharaj, please help me, please save me. We should always be in that mood, whatever we're doing. I'm very unqualified, unfit, but Guru Maharaj, please help me. Gurudev, please help me. In this way, if we're always in that mood of calling out the mercy of our spiritual master in whatever I'm doing, cleaning, cooking, preaching, hearing, whatever it may be, collecting money, spending money, whatever, shopping, whatever it may be, always be begging the mercy of our spiritual master. Then our sadhana will become very, very first class, and we'll become empowered to do the maximum for pushing forward this movement on this planet to save the fallen souls from the hellish nightmare of material existence. Questions more?
Prabhuji, at the time of death, like when the soul leaves the body and it's going back to Godhead, what happens to the subtle body?
Subtle body is actually simply a cover of the... So, that covering... One example is just like a rocket takes off in outer space, you know, there's the boost. At different stages, it drops off different rockets. You have some, there's the big, huge one that gets it out of the gross atmosphere of the Earth. Then it gets into the more subtle atmosphere as another rocket takes over, and then that rocket drops off after a while, too. So actually, the subtle body is discarded. But you have a spiritual mind, and you have a spiritual intelligence, and a spiritual ego. Which are the subtle body is simply a covering of the real, the pure mind, the pure intelligence, and the pure ego. So you just like you gave up your gross body, now you discard the subtle body also. Or, that's one way of seeing it, the other way of seeing it, it just becomes transformed. There are even cases where devotees went back to Godhead in their physical body, which became spiritualized, as described, how the Pandavas went back to Godhead in the self-same body. So in that sense, the subtle, you could see how the subtle mind, the subtle material mind, intelligence, and false ego, simply become transformed. So the question is, are they transformed or are they discarded? That's probably your question. The answer is, I've never read either way in the books. I've never seen either way described in detail that I can recall. Do you remember reading that? Is the subtle body transformed or discarded at the time of death?
Well, I haven't read it.
Or a liberated
exactly,
soul.
I haven't read it exactly, but there is another mention that it says that as the gold is put into the fire and it becomes purified,
mm-hmm.
so the subtle body is also put into the Krishna consciousness, so
he
becomes spiritual.
It's stated the mind, because he was now a worse enemy, becomes his best friend. So,
yeah,
it's an interesting question. I've never been asked that before. I've never read the answer anywhere for that. Does the subtle mind, the subtle body simply become purified and therefore now suitable for entering in the spiritual world, or is it just discarded as a piece of garbage? Interesting question. I don't know. But either way, the process going back to God is the same. You have to make your mind your friend by absorbing it fully in Krishna consciousness.
And if it becomes friend, then what is the point in discarding?
Yeah. So that, from that angle, the theory that when that mind is transformed and goes with you back to Godhead. Or it could be seen as both, actually, also. It could be seen as both. Because when you purify, when you spiritualize your mind, then while you're just expunging all the dirt, you're discarding all the dirt which is polluting the mind. So, the interesting question. That subtle body, subtle mind, intelligence, and false ego is keeping us in this material existence right now. But if it becomes... It's a very interesting question.
False ego is just that subtle, but there is an ego also there. The ego is not discarded. The false ego is just...
False ego... The ego means identity, the false identity with matter. That's
yeah.
false... That identification with matter, that is false ego.
Yeah.
But real ego is on the eternal servant of Krishna.
Right.
So ego is not given up, simply false ego is given up. We'll have to look for the answer, more detailed information, and we're studying the books now. We'll see if that answer comes out of our reading.
You'd say the Thakan chanted Diksha Vidhanena, so it becomes purified.
Come again?
It becomes purified.
Yes, it does. But the material body also becomes purified and spiritualized, and it is discarded.
Yeah, but
the gross body.
That gross body is, has six changes, which subtle body doesn't.
Yes, but still.
Subtle body is like a false ego, because which is the manifestation of the ego, transformed. So it can be transformed back to ego.
So we'll keep an eye on our readings. I can't make a conclusive analysis at this point. Any other questions?
So when we go back to the spiritual world, like, does the soul itself become the body, or do we get another spiritual body?
The soul, right now, the spirit soul, is in a dormant state. But when he becomes liberated, reinstated in Swarup, just as Krishna and his body are the same, the soul and his spiritual body are one and the same. The spiritual body then fully manifests again when you go back to Godhead.
So doesn't it have mind, ego, and whatever?
It has those aspects.
Does it develop new one, or is it the same one? Which
is no, it's the same mind.
Okay. So the answer is that.
That's. Well, that now we consider that Prabhupada said in the spiritual world you actually remember what you did here, that would indicate a continuity of not discarding it but actually maintaining the same mind and intelligence, but now in their original pure form. That would indicate that actually we always had the same mind and the same intelligence, it's just they're polluted now. We have in the ego, and we have to free them from that by chanting Hare Krishna mantra. So it leans, everything is leaning in that direction. All the indicators are pointing towards having the same mind, the same intelligence, but now in a purified state. Because otherwise, how you remember your devotional activities you did here in Tampa in July of 2006? Questions more?
Okay.
This is your last chance. It's up to them. I'm not booting them out.
But we have to do also.
Yeah, an hour and a half.
So you need to pay.
We can stretch it, and Ramiya is not getting there until 5, you know, in his apartment.
That's not the point.
So, there's nothing further. I'm getting indications that we should stop the class.
If they have a very urgent question, they can ask it.
Huh?
If they have a very urgent question, they can
ask. Yeah, anything that you really want to hear. You know, we're not, we don't want to, we're not saying, okay, arbitrarily ending the class. If there's no further questions, then we can end. If there's further questions, we will continue. Especially from the two of you. She's coming on the road anyway. She'll have more chances. Especially if the two of you have any further questions. No more questions from you. But if you have, then we can give you special privilege. Extend the class.
I just wanted to ask one more thing. I have heard that when we sleep, like the soul and the subtle body, they leave the body or they go to shift to the edge of the body. Is that correct?
What's the question?
When we sleep, then the subtle body and the soul leaves the body.
Yes, that's right. It's called astral travel. You don't require any special... Everyone astral travels every night. The subtle body, which contains the soul within it, actually goes off traveling. When you wake up, it comes back again.
How do we wake up? When it comes back, then we wake up.
Yeah, concomitant, like that. Yes, any other questions?
Prabhuji, also we have one devotee here, this thing, Shailaja Mataji, Purnima Mataji.
Yeah,
yeah,
Purnima.
She was telling us once that she has the ability to, like, you know, see ghosts, and so we were just wondering, like, what gives a particular soul that ability to see subtle bodies like that, or is it some gift, or is it some sort of
Well, you're interested in developing the power to see ghosts?
No, no, it's just I'm just curious as to why, because I've heard stories of her daughter also. She is like, you know, sort of she can interact, or, like, you know, even push that bodies. So I was just curious as to how.
It's karma. Some people have the karma that allows them to do that. But is it desirable? That's, you know, is it desirable to have that ability to see ghosts?
There are people who, by their tantric powers and things like that, they can wake the ghostly element in the graveyard also, and they capture them and make them work for them whatever they want to do. But there's very dangerous also. I've seen there are so many people doing those kind of things. They're very dangerous. And the person who is doing that is in a great danger also. But if he does something wrong, he gets the opposite reaction. So these things are not very important.
Would you, I was just thinking, like, you know, just from these examples and stories, it should be pretty clear that this theory of evolution is bogus. Like, you know, when subtle bodies have no matter, still there is life, or we can say. So why are such things not accepted?
People are blinded by sense gratification itself. They want instant pleasure, therefore they invent philosophies and ideologies which support their program of unrestricted sense gratification. They're blinded by sense gratification, that's all.
These are like real proofs of subtle matter, but nowhere in the world, like, there's acceptance to...
Is what accepted?
It's nowhere it is accepted.
What point?
There is subtle matter, there is ghostly elements with that.
How many people accept that there's ghostly elements? You ask them, you find it, you take a poll, many people believe there's such a thing as ghosts. Many people have experience of ghosts also.
Because I used to always think, like, what is the proof? Like, people
ghosts?
Ask, people ask, like, what is the proof of we having a past life, we having a future life? So in that sense, like, this is strong evidence, like, you know, that subtle matter exists.
Hmm.
And but nobody inquires as to, or scientists.
Very fearful.
Yeah, there are so many evidences. Krishna says that is the greatest evidence. And the fact that some people are, you know, born with birth defects. You think the universe is so cruel? Some people are born with the birth defects without deserving it from a previous lifetime. I mean, there's so many indicators that show that we have previous lifetimes. So many indicators of that. Plus, so many people who can actually remember their previous lives also accurately.
Yeah.
All right, then. We'll stop here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.